By many measures, our society isn't doing very well, and our attitudes towards family, faith, and our nation are poor. According to a Wall Street Journal NORC survey done last year, they found that declining levels of support for organized religion, family formation, community involvement, and patriotism to be very low. You're listening to The Commonwealth Matters, and I'm your host, Richard Nelson. According to Princeton law professor Robert George, attitudes in these different areas reflect a loss of fidelity. Professor George launched Fidelity Month in 2023, and he's here to talk about his efforts to elevate the idea of fidelity as crucial to personal and societal health. Professor George, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Richard. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, we so appreciate your time and what you're doing with Fidelity Month. I think a good place to start in this program is with that Wall Street Journal NORC poll done in March of last year. And they found declining levels of support, as I said, for organized religion, family formation, community involvement, and patriotism. And here are a few of the numbers. 28% of Americans believe that marriage is not that important or not that important at all. 27% believe that patriotism is not important or not that important at all. 33% said that belief in God is not that important. 40% believe that religion is not important. And 33% believe that having children is not that important. These are a few of the key areas where Americans were polled. Clearly not a good sign of our attitudes towards these important areas of life. What's going on with these attitudes? You're a little bit older than me. I'm not going to point out your age, but you've seen a little bit more than I've seen in a lifetime. And I would guess that these numbers have radically changed, probably even in the last 10 to 15 years. Do you have an idea of what's going on with our attitudes towards these important areas of life?
Well, it's complex, but I have some ideas of what's going on. I don't think anybody understands it entirely, but I think we can get some insight into it. One of the features of the polling that you didn't call attention to is people's attitudes toward the importance of making a lot of money. That's up. So people's attitudes toward religion, toward family, toward community are down, but their belief in the importance of making a lot of money, getting ahead, have gone up. So we've got a problem here, and we've got to fix it. What kind of problem is it? Well, it's a loss of faith. It's a problem of a loss of faith, and that's what I mean by fidelity. There are some values that used to bind Americans together. Despite our historic manifest differences of race and sex and ethnicity and religious affiliation, what were those values shared across the board? Well, faith in God. That was a value for Americans, whether they were Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Black, white, of Croatian heritage, of Ecuadorian heritage, of Nigerian heritage. Americans of all backgrounds shared faith in God, and that was a value that tended to bind us together. It enabled us to share that sentiment articulated by our founding fathers, by Thomas Jefferson himself in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Faith in God was right there as a unifying value at the very founding of the country. And it was shared for decade upon decade upon decade. And now that belief, that faith, that idea of the importance of fidelity to God has diminished. And that's a problem. What are some other values that used to bind us together? Well, the importance of family, of fidelity to spouse, of caring for children and for elderly parents. We've had a loss, we've suffered a loss of fidelity in that domain as well. And again, Democrats and Republicans, people who are Black and people who are white and people who are Asian and people who are Latino, people who are Protestant, people who are Catholic, people who are Jewish, despite these differences, Americans shared a belief in the importance of fidelity to spouse, fidelity to family. Were we always perfect as individuals in practicing the virtue of fidelity? No, we're frail, fallen, fallible human beings. We err, we sin. But we believe, nevertheless, in the importance of doing our best to be faithful to spouses and family. And what else? What were other values that shared that bound us together, bound us together despite our differences? Well, belief in our country and its goodness, belief in the importance of patriotism, that is gratitude for our blessings of liberty and prosperity that we try our best to repay by being good citizens. That's what patriotism is really all about. And similarly, fidelity to our local communities, the belief that we have an obligation to give back to our communities, to be productive, contributing members of our local communities. Well, that has diminished too, according to all the polling. And again, what's lost there is something that used to bind us together. It's not just that Democrats were patriots. Republicans and Democrats were patriots. Protestants and Catholics, Jews, people who were not of any particular religious affiliation were nevertheless patriotic. People of all ethnicities, people of all races shared a belief in the importance of country and of community and of service to country and community. In our great military struggles, the heroic struggle against Nazism in the Second World War, just to cite one example, despite the problems we had in our country, despite racial injustice in our country, blacks and whites fought valiantly as patriots to defeat the Nazi war machine. Protestants and Catholics and Jews, people of every ethnicity. But here again, a loss of faith in our country, a loss of faith in our communities, a loss of our sense of our obligation to be good citizens, to be patriots, has undermined that unity. So it's necessary, Richard, for us to do something to bring it back, to restore the fidelity that will restore our unity. And that's what Fidelity Month is all about. So last year, based on no authority other than myself, by the power vested in me by absolutely no one, I took to social media and declared the month of June to be Fidelity Month, a month where we rededicate ourselves to fidelity to God, to spouses and families, and to country and communities. And we're going to do it again this June, and we're going to do it every June going forward until we restore those values that used to unite us as Americans.
Very good. And I appreciate you doing that, Professor George. Of course, you launched it June 1st of last year. June has traditionally been, at least for the last couple of decades, traditionally known as Pride Month in the country, widely celebrated with parades and various events in institutions, the workplace. Did you get pushback from the LGBT community saying that you're trying to co-opt the month?
No, I didn't get much pushback. I didn't expect that much, and I didn't get that much. I myself am Catholic, and for Catholics, June is the month of the Sacred Heart, dedicated to the Sacred Heart. I got a little pushback from one or two of my Catholic co-religionists who said, "Wait a minute, you're stepping on Sacred Heart Month here." And my response was, "No. You know, a month can be a month celebrating more than one great thing." So we can have Sacred Heart Month for Catholics, and Catholics can join with our Protestant brothers and with our Jewish friends and everybody to also celebrate Fidelity Month. Now, I'm not a Pride Month guy. I don't share the values of Pride Month, but the people who want to celebrate Pride Month are perfectly free. It's a free country with the First Amendment. They are free to celebrate June as Pride Month, and those of us who believe in fidelity are free to celebrate June as Fidelity Month. So let's just get on with it. I'm not concerned about trying to block somebody else. I hope they're not concerned about trying to block me. I just want to get going and moving forward with the values that we believe in and promoting those, because I do think they are so crucial to the future health of our nation. Remember, Richard, we're a democratic republic. We're a pluralistic society. We're a society that does not have common bonds in blood or soil or throne and altar. We're not like the nations of old Europe and so many of the other nations in the world where their unity is not based on ideas and beliefs and commitments, but on things like blood and soil and throne and altar, a common race, a common religion, a common cultural heritage, and so forth. We Americans, we come from everywhere. We come from East Asia. We come from Africa. We come from the Indian subcontinent. We come from Europe. We're from everywhere. We represent many different traditions of faith, ethnicities. So we need something to bind us together. And the only something that's out there that can bind us together are shared beliefs. Not totally shared. We differ in religion. We differ in politics. And that's fine. But historically, just to repeat myself, despite those religious differences and political differences, and certainly differences of race and ethnicity and so forth, we were bound together by faith in God. Faith in the belief in the importance of fidelity to spouses and families, and the importance of patriotism, fidelity to country and service to our local communities. So that's what June's all about. And if other people want to celebrate June for other purposes, free country, let them do it. But we share that freedom too. So we can celebrate that month for fidelity, and that's what we're doing.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Hi, my name is Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. We're here to shore up the sanctity of human life, religious freedom, natural marriage, and sound fiscal policies. At the Commonwealth Matters, we have conversations with leading thinkers and policymakers to help us think biblically about the great issues of the day. If you appreciate our work, then please consider a donation today. This work is entirely supported by people just like you. Your gifts and tax-deductible contributions help to underwrite this program, and you help to get this important message out all across the Commonwealth. We believe that the Commonwealth of Kentucky is a great place to live, and we want to keep it that way for our families and our children. That's why we're standing for what's right, for what's good, and what's true right here in Kentucky. Thanks in advance for your support, and may God bless you. If you're just joining us, you are tuned in to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center, here with Professor Robert George from Princeton University, and we are talking about fidelity and Fidelity Month. Professor George, we live in an age where, to use Carl Truman's term, an age of expressive individualism. And this expressive individualism is promoted and embraced as the highest ideal for people. The idea that we have self-autonomy and ability to define our lives down to our very deepest core, including our gender. And this seems to sell. This modern attitude about self reminds me of William Ernest Henley's poem, Invictus. And the closing lines say this: "It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll, I am the master of the fate. I am of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." So why should the, in light of this, in our current cultural moment that we're in, the current attitude about self and us with having the ability to define ourselves, why should the idea of fidelity appear to people who told there are no limits, there are no boundaries to their lives? You are the master of your fate and the captain of your soul. Why should young people in particular listen to this? And how does fidelity appeal to them?
Sure. One pretty darn good reason for shifting attention and considering that maybe fidelity is the better way to go is simply the carnage that is out there for anyone and everyone to see that comes from the cultural embracing of what Carl, following the great sociologist Robert Vella, calls expressive individualism. Carl being the great Carl Truman, wonderful theologian and social commentator. Robert Vella the late Robert Vella, very distinguished sociologist who actually coined the phrase expressive individualism for this idea that we manufacture ourselves pretty much out of whole cloth. We through our own self-assertion, of the assertion of our autonomy, we manufacture everything about ourselves that really matters. But look at what we've got for that. Has the embracing of expressive individualism, especially with respect to sexuality, for example, has the adoption of the view of the self as imperial and of ourselves as manufacturers of ourselves, has that produced a lot of good in the world? Has it produced compassion and kindness and love and flourishing? Has it led to the well-being and fulfillment of human beings? No, quite the opposite. It's led to broken families, broken lives, selfishness, and all the harm, especially to children. that comes from that kind of selfishness. You know, the historians are fond of breaking up the epochs, Richard, into the age of this and the age of that. I'm sure you've seen this. So historians tell us that the medieval period, Middle Ages, that's the age of faith. And what they mean by that is that in the medieval period, at least in medieval Europe, the touchstone of justice, of goodness, of right, of truth, was conformity to the teachings of the faith. The great thinkers of the Middle Ages and the people of the Middle Ages were dedicated to faith and to the idea that the touchstone of truth and of goodness and of justice and of right is conformity to the faith. But they were also great practitioners of rationality. They had a high view of reason. So what about the Enlightenment? Well, the historians call the Enlightenment the age of reason, or sometimes the age of science. Why? It's because reason was understood as the touchstone of faith and justice and truth and goodness and right. Well, okay, if the medieval period is the age of faith and the Enlightenment is the age of reason or science, what's our age? What's our epoch? What are we the age of? Well, I'm afraid what we are living in is the age of feeling. It's not true. It's not conformity to faith that's the touchstone of truth or justice or right or good. It's not conformity to reason that's the touchstone of truth and justice and right and good. It's feeling. What's true is what I feel is true. Or what's true about me is how I feel. So I can have my truth and you can have your truth and they can be in conflict because you feel differently than I feel. Now, there's a lot to be said for faith in the quest for truth. There's a lot to be said for reason. And in my view, a sound approach to truth and truth-seeking is one that sees, I'm going to quote the late pontiff, Pope John Paul II here, sees faith and reason as the two wings on which the human spirit ascends to the truth. These are not opposed or even in tension with each other. They are both necessary. They're not only mutually compatible, they're mutually necessary in the pursuit of truth. But feeling is unreliable. Feeling will lead you astray. Your feelings might happen to be in line with truth, but they might not either. And they're not going to get you any closer to truth. Is going with your feelings is much more likely to lead you astray.
Professor George, the historian, I'm going to take us in a little different direction here, a bigger view, broad picture view. The Roman historian Savinius observed the greatness of Rome at its zenith, its wealth, and its splendor. And he said this, that the Roman Empire is luxurious, but it is in misery. It is dying, but it laughs. Even while Rome fell, the Christian church emerged out of the ruins of Roman culture. Their self-centered ethics were supplanted by a Christian ethos of fidelity to God, fidelity to marriage, fidelity to monogamy within marriage, their love of neighbor, and care for the least among us. This new ethos arose out of the ruins of this self-centered cultural ethos that Rome embraced, and it just led to their demise. While we see the moral and cultural ruins around us today, the statistics again bear this out, where do you suggest that the average person begin to implement fidelity? Do they look to their own lives, their own families, their communities? Where do they begin? As they look at the ruins around them, peoples whose lives have been damaged, institutions that are teetering. And as I say this, I'm speaking to the person who is fearful. I don't want to get out there. I don't want to go against the grain. I might be criticized or I might be labeled in one way or another. It might hurt my job prospects. It might hurt my standing in my neighborhood. Where does the average person begin? Who cares about reinstituting fidelity into our society? What recommendations do you have?
All right. First, it's a matter of rededicating ourselves to fidelity to God and to spouses and families and to country and community. All right. How do we do that? It's not just a psychological move. We do have to think, right? We have to say to ourselves, we have to resolve, you know what? I'm going to be a more faithful Christian or a more faithful Jew or a more faithful Muslim. And this is not sectarian. Fidelity Month is not just for Christians. It's for everybody who recognizes the importance of fidelity. So no matter who you are, rededicate yourself to God. Be a better Christian than you're being right now. If you haven't been, and you know, if you haven't been praying regularly, start praying. Again, whether you're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, if you haven't been praying regularly to God, start praying. Start praying more regularly. If you haven't been attending church or synagogue or mosque, show up. If you're not active in the affairs of your religious community, your local parish church, or your the community church you belong to, or your synagogue, start playing a role there. So that's how we rededicate ourselves as a practical matter, not just resolution, going beyond resolution. It's a practical matter, rededicating ourselves to God. Now, what about family, spouses? Well, you might be a faithful husband in the sense that you're not having affairs, but now let's ask ourselves, am I being a great husband, or am I being a great wife? Am I really serving my spouse? Not just technically being faithful, not having affairs, but am I serving, or am I wanting too much to be served? Is my focus on getting her to do stuff for me and take care of my needs and desires and wants? You know, I should be looking out more for her. I should be serving her. My vocation as a husband, like all vocations, a vocation is a call to service. My vocation as a husband is to serve my wife. Her vocation is to serve me, but she is the one who should worry about that. I should worry less about, is she serving me and fulfilling her vocation as a wife? I should be worried about, am I serving her as well as I can be? And that's my vocation as a husband. Now, what about children? Same thing. Now, serving your children means being there for the kids. It's not just arranging for them to be at Little League. It's being at the games when you can be. Now, we all, you know, we have jobs and other responsibilities, and we have other kids, and, you know, you can't be at every Little League game. But be there when you can. Do not let those devices and cell phones and smartphones babysit your kids. Don't let those devices substitute for your being there for your kids. In fact, let's maybe limit or do away with the devices, especially for young children, and make sure that we're parenting and not shuffling off the parenting role to the devices. Now, what about patriotism and community? How can I be a better citizen? Am I voting? Or when election day comes, do I just not make it? Or I'm busy with other things? How about being involved in civic affairs? Am I working for campaigns for candidates that I really believe in, that I think would do a good job for our nation and for our community? Am I contributing some money? I might not have a lot to contribute, but am I making at least some contribution to trying to improve our civic life? Same for the community. There are things in the community that I can be involved in. Am I doing my part there? Am I playing my role? So when I mean rededicating ourselves, Richard, to God and to family, spouses and families and to communities, I mean not just the resolution, but the practical doing of things that are the substance of the fidelity that I'm asking for.
That's good. Very good. As we wind down the program, Professor George, there are two questions. Do you have any big plans for Fidelity Month this June 2024? And then secondly, how can our listeners commemorate Fidelity Month?
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about those things. I realize I failed to answer an earlier question that you raised. I got distracted off on part of on a different question. And you asked me about people worrying that if they are, you know, too public about their fidelity to God, if they're too public about their beliefs about marriage and family, if they're too public about their patriotism, they'll be looked down on or maybe even suffer personal or professional consequences in this woke age when people are castigated for having politically incorrect beliefs. What I want to say to that is, especially to those who are Christians as we are, but I hope it'll also have resonances to people of other faiths, but certainly to Christians. Our predecessors, our forebears, were subjected to a lot worse than being called a name on social media or even losing a job. Their fidelity cost them their lives, and they were willing to do that lovingly, freely, willing to do that in imitation of Jesus, who gives his life for all of us. the great martyrs or the great heroes of Christianity, they were willing to suffer for fidelity to God and to family and to community. Why was John the Baptist murdered by Herod Antipas? It's because he insisted on bearing testimony to the truth about marriage. He called out the king's illicit marriage, and he wouldn't stay quiet about it. People today would say to John the Baptist, hey, that's a private matter. That's their business. What are you doing talking about? You got what you deserved. But we Christians, we need to recognize that John the Baptist is the model for us. Jesus himself said, there is no greater man born of woman than John. What made him great? It was his fidelity. The fidelity that he lived for and was willing to die for. So we're called to imitate John and to imitate Jesus himself and our willingness, if necessary, to suffer and even die for our faith, for fidelity to God and to the godly values that we hold dear, rightly hold dear. But, you know, none of us is going to lose his life over this. Most of us won't even suffer professional consequences. We just need to muster the courage to be willing to be different, to be willing to stand out, to be willing to be called a name, to be willing to have somebody dislike us. We need to do it lovingly, not with anger or not with vitriol. We need to do it lovingly, but we need to do it. I'll tell you what I've learned in my years of trying to give public witness to the values that you and I are talking about, Richard, fidelity to God, fidelity to family. What I've learned is there's good news and bad news. The good news is courage is contagious. When people see courage being manifested by someone, they admire that and they want to be like that. And that encourages them to exemplify some courage themselves. That's the good news. The bad news is that cowardice is also contagious. When people see people behaving in a cowardly manner, not standing up, cowering in the corner, refusing to speak up when they should be speaking up, people see that. That makes them afraid too. It undermines their resolution to exercise some courage. So we need to be the ones who are willing to step out and perform acts, even at some risk to ourselves, for the sake of courage, for the sake of fidelity.
Very good. Dr. George, this has been a real pleasure being with you on the Commonwealth Matters. I want to thank you for joining us and what you're doing to promote the idea of fidelity in our culture. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in.